You're listening to The Really Big Questions. I'm NPR's Lynn Neary. Consider this. Why do the vast majority of people alive today believe there are invisible beings with miraculous powers who watch everything they say and do? Why are they willing to sacrifice their time, their wealth, perhaps their lives for them? Why are they even willing at times to kill in their name? Why do they organize their lives, their families, their communities and societies around these beliefs? Why, in other words, are people religious? That's a really big question, and it's one that increasingly science is trying to answer. Our program on the science of religion was produced by John Rieger.
For as long as there have been humans, we've felt the need to worship, to venerate certain special beings, objects, and ideas in rites and rituals. And wherever we've been, it seems, most of us have been this way.
The details vary, but we find something like this, quote-unquote religion, in every society we've ever studied.
You may not feel an attachment to any of the institutionalized religions out there, but I don't think you can be a human being without a certain religious sentiment.
We found the records and relics of this impulse in every corner of human history. Religions great and small, living and extinct, quiet and contemplative or militant and expansive, each speaking to its people about humanity, the universe, and their meaning, purpose, and prospects. Why we're here and where we're going.
Underneath the veneer of nature and history in our lives, underneath the surface, something really, really momentous is going on.
Religion itself is the process of interpreting, putting a meaning on, making human sense out of this awesome, non-human, transcendent, by its very definition, not definable, reality.
This is a program about religion and science. But it's not a program about whether the Earth is actually 6,000 years old, whether evolution is a fact or just a theory, or even whether God or gods exist. This is a program about human biology and human experience, about scientific understanding and how we understand our own lives. It's about scientists trying to explain something about human nature, that human beings are religious. Our story could begin practically anywhere on Earth, any place on this globe.
Almighty God, our Father, everything we see and everything we can't see exists because of you alone.
Opening in the sky. It's beautiful, and the sky is opening up.
Religion is everywhere, and everywhere different. People have worshipped the sun and the moon, goddesses of fertility and gods of war. Believers invoke the power of sacred relics, from ancient texts to human bones, and prayers and rituals call on unseen spirits to spare us from earthquakes, wars, and famines, to soften the pain of loneliness, sickness, and death, even to bring us victory in football games. Let's go on with our tour.
The dead are not dead. The dead are in the wind that blows, in the river that flows. They remain amongst us in everyday activity.
We're not going to get into a deep discussion on religion, but I know where I will be once my human days are gone.
What can we make of this babel of belief? Well, for one thing, that religion appears to be part of human nature. Now, for most of history, it was religion itself that answered our questions about nature, both its meaning and its mechanism. But in just a few hundred years, barely the blink of an eye, really, that changed. In contest after contest, from Galileo to Darwin, from the age of the Earth to the origins of life, religious doctrine was upended by science. Daniel Dennett is an evolutionary theorist.
Until science came along in the 17th century, let's say, the final authority on all matters of fact was really the church. But today, even religions acknowledge that science is the best way of getting at factual truth.
Indeed, the scientific method is the most powerful tool ever devised for getting to the facts and refuting false ideas about how things work. But religious beliefs are exceptionally tenacious.
And since religions have always had factual claims that they have insisted upon, this creates a zone of serious conflict.
Now, scientists are asking questions about religion itself. They're asking how it evolved, why the human psyche is so hospitable to religious ideas, and what's going on in the neurons of the believing brain. Eliot Sober is a philosopher of science.
Every religion has its history. Doctrines have changed. There are many religions. They can't all be true. This is just a set of facts about human society and human culture that we need to understand, and science will help us to do it.
These researchers start with the same premises, that human beings are natural organisms and that all organisms are products of evolution. But they're coming to very different conclusions about religion. Some think it serves an evolutionary purpose, like love or aggression. But others say it's just an evolutionary side effect. And some even believe religion could be a self-perpetuating entity, maybe benign, possibly dangerous, that uses humans as its host, like a virus. Daniel Dennett.
The common cold is good for itself. It survives because it can survive. Now, maybe religion is like the common cold.
But there are also scientists, scholars, and theologians who believe that religion is something science can't fully comprehend. They talk about meaning and values, as if scientists looking for the causes of religion were asking the wrong questions about the wrong things. John Haught is a Catholic theologian.
I'm very fascinated by attempts to explain religion in evolutionary terms, but at the same time, and without in any way contradicting the evolutionary explanations, I can say we are religious because we're drawn toward the horizon of an infinite meaning, goodness, truth, and beauty.
Norman Fisher is a Buddhist priest.
I mean, if somebody said, well, you know, your religion is completely a dream, I would say, well, what a beautiful dream, and it really serves me well, and I'm enjoying it.
While scientists still disagree on virtually every aspect of religion, the grip of religion on the human species seems stronger than ever. And for many people in many places, scientific inquiry into the origins of religion is taboo. Daniel Dennett wants to change that. His book is called Breaking the Spell.
The spell I want to break is the spell that says, don't try, that prohibits that, that says that's not nice, that's vandalism, thou shalt not study religion scientifically.
Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. You might also call it an Enlightenment city, one of the first ever built on a rational, pre-planned grid. It's home to the University of Pennsylvania and the neuroscience laboratory of Dr. Andrew Newberg. And I'm here to help him map out the grid of human nature by having my brain scanned.
Well, an MRI machine is basically a big magnet, but...
The MRI, or the magnetic resonance imaging machine, is specifically tuned to detect water, the primary constituent of blood. Because brain activity increases blood flow, the scanner can identify what parts of the brain are working harder during the experiment. Newberg is exploring the effects of religious imagery on the brain. He'll be showing me, and other subjects in his current study, a series of pictures, some religious symbols, some not, to see where our brains light up.
Have you ever been in an MRI scanner?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it's kind of being shoved into a torpedo tube kind of thing, and, mm-hmm. and it's a little tight. The other main issue is that it's very noisy.
How loud is it?
It's about 110 decibels.
110 decibels is about as loud as a chainsaw.
The earphones work pretty well.
The MRI machine's superconducting electromagnets, cooled by liquid nitrogen, generate huge magnetic fields, powerful enough to realign your protons, powerful enough to suck objects from across the room right into the space occupied by your head. So no belt, no keys, no metal anywhere.
Okay, here we go. You all right?
Ready when you are, doctor.
Okay, here we go.
Uh
Against this soundtrack of clanging and banging, simple black and white images flash on the screen in front of my eyes. A crucifix, a circle, a leering skull, an asterisk, Satan, a swastika, a dove of peace. It's like an expressionist film with an incomprehensible plot. With each image, the scanner records the activity in my brain. Those results are still pending. Newberg began investigating religion and the brain about 15 years ago. In a series of studies, he scanned the brains of Tibetan monks deep in meditation, Franciscan nuns lost in prayer, Sufis and transcendental meditators. They all showed a similar profile of activity in several brain regions, a tantalizing clue to the components of religious experience. But some people saw more. A blizzard of breathless articles in the mainstream press proclaimed that Newberg and other researchers had found the God module, the part of the brain that causes religion. But what causes what is precisely what isn't clear. Andrew Newberg.
When we did the scans of our Franciscan nun, she looked at me and she said, you know, thank you, Dr. Newberg, for showing me how God changes my brain.
But soon afterwards, he heard a different opinion.
A few weeks later, I was speaking to someone who considered themselves to be an atheist, and they said, oh, Dr. Newberg, thank you so much. You've proven that God is nothing more than a manifestation of your brain's function.
In fact, the brain scans don't say anything about why people are religious. Finding a recurring pattern of brain activity may seem to show that religion is a built-in part of our brain. If we could understand this God module, we would know what makes people religious. But all thought and experience depend on activity in the brain. A group of chess players might all have similar brain activity, but that doesn't mean playing chess is built into the brain.
So, are humans religious by nature, or is religion just something we've picked up along the way, like playing chess? To try and find the answers to those kinds of questions, we have to talk about human biology in the broadest possible terms. And in the 21st century, that means talking about evolution, which we'll do when the science of religion returns. You're listening to The Really Big Questions from PRI, Public Radio International. To learn more about The Really Big Questions, visit our website, trbq.org. This is PRI, Public Radio International.